Yeah, yeah, old school. That's what I'm talking about. Listen, this ain't for everybody. Some of y'all need to hear this. I know you're in the trenches fighting, but check it out. I'm going to put it down like this so I can help the saints understand. Everything you're going through is all part of the master plan. Or what? You thought because you got saved, everything was going to be peaches and cream? You better wake up, son. Don't nothing come to a sleeper but a dream. Faith without works is dead. Read your Bible. You know what it said. He who don't work, don't eat. Slackers don't get fed. Huh? Yeah. Jesus said, he who puts his hands to the plow looks back the same ain't fit. Some of y'all ain't been in the trenches 5 minutes and you're about ready to quit. I ain't mad at ya, I'm just hitting you with the real. If you died for me, I was still tripping. Now how you think that make you feel? Check this out, deep game, this here's deep, huh? Some of y'all ain't saw nothing but your study trying to reach, huh? But unto him who's able to possess your fathers by his glory. Struggles might be part of your testimony, but it ain't the end of the story. Now the point is since it's prophesied way back in the day. Choir, sing your hook right here and see if the church can relate.
I know we can make it.
The fiery trials were to try you. You say, why you? But your shirt say, what would Jesus do? Why you asking if he ain't trying to do what he's saying? Huh? He told you he was going to have tribulations, but you thought he was playing. Huh? 1 minute you're telling how good God is and can't nobody beat the talk. The next minute you're backsliding so fast, I'm like you're moonwalking. Huh? Oh yeah, I'm preaching to myself because I ain't no better. It ain't like I've been following his every word, obeying it to the letter. But we soldiers, we got to remember that. Regroup, stay on point. Hey, yeah, bow down, confess, repent, stay humble, let him anoint. Huh? It ain't easy as I thought it was. I'd be lying if I told you that. But it's showing up getting better all the time. Trust me, that's a fact. Ain't nothing we going through that can't be handled. God put that on his tongue. Like they say, you can shout now if you want to, cause the battle's already won. So while you're going through the valley, don't even trip. You're gonna be on top. Choir, send the hook line one more game. This time you don't stop.
I know we can.
Yeah, we're gonna stop it right there. Welcome to the show. This is Can a Player Play. This is your host, Lamont Patterson. Welcome, everybody. And I'm joined by my esteemed colleague, Dr. Matthew Anderson. Welcome.
Hey, Lamont. How are you doing today? I'm joining you from Coconut Creek, Florida, the butterfly capital of the world. Did you know that's where I was?
You know, I knew you were somewhere in some exotic place, you know, but I didn't know you was hanging out with the butterflies. You know what I mean?
I'm hanging out with the butterflies.
Well,
we got so
cool,
many
though.
Butterflies, we don't know what to do.
Oh, well, that's
cool,
though. You know, I need to find a place where the mermaids be hanging out. Well, you got quiet on that?
You got quiet on that. Let me, I'm thinking I'm getting a call from our guest. Let me check her.
Oh, all right. Well, welcome everybody. It's the Can a Player Play for those who just joined us for the first time. And wow, it's just a pleasure to have you. And it's a pleasure to be able to say that we've been able to come and use this platform and hopefully to help people or give them a little food for thought to benefit them some time away and through their daily activities. 9 years going strong. And we're still here reaching out with our message. So we're looking for our guests to join us anytime now.
You there?
Yes, I'm here.
Our guest just called me. She's going to call in just a second. She dialed the wrong number.
Oh, okay.
You had that problem once in a while, right? You dial the wrong number. I have.
Oh, well, it's probably because, you know, technology as it stands, you know, some years ago, we used to know everybody's phone number, you know, without thinking about it twice. But because of technology, don't nobody know anybody's phone number anymore. Where you go, Matthew?
I'm having trouble. She keeps calling me.
Oh, yeah. Well, don't forget, in the meantime, you on the air and you be dropping
you
out.
Tried
like,
me.
Okay.
You tried me. She's calling me, and I'm trying to get her the right number. I don't know where she went. she's causing stress already, and she's going to help us with stress.
What number did she call from? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, I do. Let me just see if I can get her just a second.
Well, I mean, what's the first numbers? And I'll know, you know, because I see a bunch of
numbers. Her first one's a 350.
No, she hasn't called yet.
She's not in there?
No.
Okay. I just gave her our number.
Well, maybe this is her right here, 325.
Try that one.
Hello?
Hello, this is Mary here.
Hi, Mary.
Hello, good afternoon.
Hello, Mary. Welcome to the show. We finally made it.
We got you in here now. It's good you called, Mary, because we were having a little bit of stress and we might need some help with it.
No, tell the truth. We were having a lot of stress.
Well, I'm here to rescue the world, so.
That's good. I'm so glad because I've been trying really hard to help out Lamont for a long time, and I need some help. Mary, we're glad to have you. Let me introduce you, and then we'll have a bunch of questions for you, but I would just like to share with our listeners who you are and what you're about. This is Dr. Mary Wingo, who is our guest today. She was born in the United States, where she earned a PhD in human stress research from the University of North Texas. And in 2014, she immigrated to Ecuador, which is a tiny country in South America. Living in a new and very different society opened her eyes to the unsustainable social, economic, and political cost preventable stress causes in the modern world. And so Dr. Wingo's aim is to clearly explain to the public the biological mechanisms behind the stress response, as well as its staggering cost to society. So, Mary, we are really glad to have you. We are both convinced, of course, that this is a very important subject and has been for many decades as our world has moved into new levels and complexities of stress, which I hope you can tell us even more about. So thank you for joining us, and thank you for being willing to talk about this subject with us.
Oh, it is my pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
So your book is called The Impact of the Human Stress Response, right?
That is correct.
How would you describe that book as being different from the other self-help books on the market? Because I know that there's quite a lot about stress and dealing with stress out there, but yours sounds like you're approaching this maybe in a little different way than usual. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Can I ask the question, Matthew, before she answers that one?
Okay. Sure.
Could Mary, could you just tell our listeners what is stress? I know people just use the word loosely. You know, I'm stressed, I got stressed, but a lot of people really don't know what that is exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I can. And as a matter of fact, it's actually the question of the century, because this is a question that many, many scientists have tried to answer over a period of, around 100 years. And because it is what the problem is with the study of stress is that it's so complex, it's probably the most complex field in science. And so that's why it's been so woo-woo. It's kind of in the woo-woo realm up until recently and not well understood. But let me tell you basically what my definition of stress is. This kind of sort of unpacks everything. Stress is the rate of adjustment that you undergo in order to adapt to whatever environment you happen to be in at that particular moment that you're trying to adapt. And that's all it is. So basically, our stress mechanisms are mechanisms by which we adapt.
Mary, could you say it one more time, please?
Oh, absolutely. Stress is the rate of adjustment that we undergo in order to adapt to whatever environment happens to be in front of us at that moment.
So what does rate of adjustment mean?
Sound like
it means how some people get stuck in a problem, get stuck in a situation, how long it take them to deal with that, figure it out, and move past it, move around it, jump over it, and keep it moving rather than dwell on it.
Exactly, but this isn't all just psychological. This also covers the purely physical realm as well. So it's how fast you can resolve whatever challenge that you're facing from the environment. It's the rate, and the higher the rate of adjustment, the quicker you're having to adapt, and the quicker that you're having to adapt, basically, all organs in your system, become under pressure. So it is. It's a very different way of looking at it. It's not good or bad. In fact, if we didn't have our stress mechanisms, we probably wouldn't survive the stress of being born. We have our stress mechanisms in order to deal with the novelty of life, okay, with stuff that is non-routine. And we do. We have these beautiful sets of mechanisms, but the problem is that in modernized, fully developed society, we put tremendous amounts of stress on these stress organ mechanisms. So basically what's happening, the reason why we're seeing such a spike in stress-related disease, disability, and early death is because we have actually, the way our life is constructed in the modernized world, we overwork our stress mechanisms. They're only supposed to be used periodically. We're not supposed to be under stress every minute of the day. It's only supposed to be when a bear is chasing you, and then you resolve it and you go back to life. Well, as you know, much of how our life is structured, in this day and time in our culture, basically just enforces just stressful situations every single day, multiple times a day. And this is why we've seen such a rapid spike.
Wow. So we really are in what we might call a time in the development of humans that we are experiencing more stress than we have in the past, in general.
That is correct. And you know, in the past, our stressors, again, were due to, if we were prey for other animals or infectious disease. But now, I mean, it's sort of switched. Well, you've got a lot of physical causes of stress, but you also, it's switched to a more psychological form of stress. And again, everyone can relate with that. But again, it's not just your nervous system. The stress response applies to every single organ system that you have. So, we see a spike in mental illness that we've never seen in the history of humankind. And this is all due to stress on our cognitive centers, for instance. This is just one example.
So we can go ahead, Lamont.
No, I was just going to ask, does every individual deal with stress differently?
Oh, absolutely. There are individual variations, to stress. But in essence, the causes of stress in modernized society are due to five major factors. And if you'd like to, I can go over them.
Please.
Absolutely. And also, feel free to stop me at any time. I'm sure you're going to have questions. So, just interrupt me, jump in at any time, and I'll be happy to further elaborate.
Okay.
But okay. Number one is something that we can all relate to. And I call this sort of a blanket term, is complexity. And basically what that is an over working of our mechanisms from our frontal lobe. And, I'm not sure if your listeners know this, but this is a very interesting fact about the frontal lobe. The frontal lobe is what has made us dominant in the animal kingdom. What it allows us to do is look, project ourselves in the future, and imagine, you know, solutions to our problems. So basically, as humans, our frontal lobe is our primary stress response organ. It's not our adrenal glands. It's not the fight or flight nervous system. This is what makes us human. It's our frontal lobe. But unfortunately, our frontal lobe being so new in the historical sense, it was one of the last parts of our brain to develop. It's also apt to be wonky. You know, when it performs well, it performs great. But as you maintain high stress levels, as reflected by, you know, cortisol, everybody's heard of cortisol, then after a while, your body goes into an energy conservation mode, and it shuts down a lot of the functioning of the frontal lobe. And this is why when we get stressed, we lose our temper, we don't have emotional regulation, our ability to inhibit impulses. So if you're on a diet, you've had a real stressful day, you can't control yourself, you just pig out. Well, it's because there you go. These mechanisms, and they're very real. We can all relate to this, come from a fatiguing of our frontal lobe mechanisms. And also, you know, with this, it also results in the spike of mental illness that, you know, we've never seen anything before in history like this, as well as, you know, heart disease and your other typical stress-related diseases. So, yeah, it's very interesting, the frontal lobes, and we must do what we can to preserve functioning of that. When we become overscheduled, got too much on our plates, trying to, like, burn candles at both ends, getting too much done, this is not how we were meant to function. We're only meant to function like that at short periods of time. But for many of us, we hold it as a badge of honor in our culture to just, you know, be absolutely maxed out and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so ultimately this ends up costing you more. You know, if you have a nervous breakdown or a heart attack, the lifestyle that you lead, you know, that maybe had early gains, you tend to lose it all back again, you know, through stress-related illness. So that's number
one.
Here's
a question of the century, Mary. How do you turn off that brain?
Okay, well, in order to do that, we have to go to probably the most famous and eminent American philosopher, Henry David Thoreau. Henry David Thoreau was a part of the simplicity. He's the guy who coined the term simplicity as far as, you know, having a simple life. And all you have to do is literally, okay, number one, you have to make a list of all the stressors in the realm that come under this, that come under an excessive amount of tax on your cognitive load. And you literally, like you would, you know, like a food diary or anything else, you just cut it out. Because if you don't, you're taking the same type of risk as you would be if you were smoking or not wearing a seatbelt. What I'm wanting to do is bring
you just cut it out?
The forefront, so people can understand,
say,
and actually make
Mary,
a judgment decision.
You
on
just
that.
Said you just said you just cut it out.
Yeah, you just cut it out.
What if you're married
this
to it?
Behavioral.
See, there you
Mary.
Go, Matthew. We
Mary.
Were talking about entrepreneurs. We were talking about executives that have a stressful lifestyle because they work all the time and really don't know how to turn that off. But their lifestyle and their work creates the stress.
Yeah. But
absolutely.
I had to ask a relevant question, Mary. What if you're married to it?
Well,
there's
mean,
a lot
again,
of people listening to this are going, yeah, right on, buddy. Yeah, including Lamont.
You have to understand, though, that this type of social construct is new in our history as humans.
I do.
Okay.
And I think
you know,
what you're saying
the hard
is truly
Machiavellian, dog eat dog, you know, rat race. This is only like this began as a, you know, primarily an American phenomenon in the 20th century. So
really
what we understand as life, you know, is actually a new construct. for most of civilization, we didn't live like
yeah.
that.
No, I understand. I do understand that. And so this is the number one. This is number one. Are you ranking these in order of significance, or is there some other order?
Oh, no,
or
no.
Just
no,
a list?
These are all like equally.
Is it like a circular
kind of
thing?
Deficit.
Everything is equal? Okay. All right. It makes sense. So the first one is to do with the frontal lobe or complexity?
Yes. Both.
Both. Okay.
Yeah, because our frontal lobes handle process the complexities and stress
okay.
in our lives so that we can attenuate
mm-hmm.
stress.
Right.
And when we break that organ down, then we become very vulnerable to stress because we can't deal with anything.
Well, it makes a lot of rational sense. It really does. And it makes sense. Is that there's just too much. We only have a certain amount of bandwidth we can function on, and it's stressed. All sorts of things use it up. We don't have much left to cope with.
That's right.
So what's number two?
Number two. And now, of course, I'm sure a lot of your listeners will find this interesting and pertinent, is living in an unequal society. Living in a society where, like, say, the fat cat's at the top, grab all the resources, and all us minions at the bottom are, like, scrambling for breadcrumbs. Well, this type of social hierarchy is very, very been very well studied, especially by the World Health Organization. And basically, when you're at the bottom, and let me explain to you why this is so. When you're at the bottom, of course, you have usually the poorest access to decent housing, safe neighborhoods,
mm-hmm.
Clean water, you know, good schools for your kids, health insurance. You know, you've just got the bottom of the barrel trash on everything. But what does this really mean on a human level? Basically, what it means is that, okay, when you undergo the stress response, the organs that are under stress do a phase shift. So they change from their primary state to where they were to a temporary, hopefully it's temporary, more plastic jelly-like state so they can reconfigure itself themselves to fit the demands of the environment. Okay? So when the environment is always forcing itself on you because you're having to scramble because you're the guy on the lower end, nobody is there to help you, like, you know, if you're the guy on the top end on you know, you've got your minions to you know, do your bidding. Well, you don't have
mm-hmm.
that. So you're always in that plastic state. And it's okay if the stressor is going to end, but if it's chronic, again, you literally start falling apart. You literally,
right.
your cells of the stress tissue, if it becomes injured, cannot reproduce. They cannot repair because they're in a state to be like plastic. They're trying to
mm-hmm.
change form, and you can't reproduce, you can't do anything until you get to your new state that you're supposed to be. But when you're at the bottom of the totem pole, you're perpetually in that state. And that's, especially for men, and you'll see a very high spike in very unequal society, especially for men, in stress-related disease, early death, and disability. So that's number two.
Wow. So we start to do what we start to do what we call in my business to decompensate. We start to come
yeah.
apart at the seams. Okay.
Well, I understand, you know, this is a way to have more empathy. You know, the say Trump supporters are pitted from the Bernie supporters. Well, basically, these type of dynamics happen when you have an entire society under stress at the same time. These, you know, protests and revolutions and possibly revolts in history over and over and over. They're not due to humans being in equilibrium. They're due under humans fearing maybe for their life, their ability to feed themselves, raise
mm-hmm.
their kids. I mean, they're literally fighting for their life. So this is how we understand revolutions and political discontent. This is how we can make sense of what's going on in our country right now.
Okay, I'm ready for number three.
Number three, you'll like this as well. It's kind of a segue from number two. Number three is loss of social capital, okay? And basically what that is loss of social support. And this is one thing, like living here in Ecuador, that I came full circle and I didn't understand. I mean, I understood it, but now I, like, understand it on a deep existential level. is they have a lot more social capital because they've been through so much instability since 1838. They've been through around 75 presidents, 20 constitutions,
and 10
banking holidays. So they've developed this parallel sort of social system that kind of carries people through when the financial and political systems occasionally blow up. And so, and what this does is protects the individuals from stress. You're not having to be in that constantly plastic state all the time. You can actually have some equilibrium because you're protected by your kin.
Mm. Social capital is a good phrase. I like that.
Oh, yeah. It's the original capital. I mean, it came
so let me ask
millennial
you a question,
before
then.
Financial capital.
So according to the research, people in the United States move about once every 5 years. I think that's the research that says that. So that means that people are not staying close to family.
That's right.
And I'm guessing that takes a toll in terms of the kind of stress, the effects of stress, that every time we do that, it's a high possibility that it costs us in social capital.
Bingo, bingo. See, what has happened, and again, I was wondering why this happened, because we all remember when we were kids, when we had a lot more family get-togethers, there was a lot more involvement in community and, you know, if you're religious, church or social groups. Well, this has fallen precipitously since the industrial age, and it's really fallen now. And absolutely, what happened? This is the best I can figure. After World War II, okay, the fat cats at the top wanted to make more money, from an incredibly prosperous nation. So what they did was they developed like marketing and materialism and finance, so you can pay for your vacuum cleaner $5 a week or $10 a week. So they developed these constructs, and with that, over a period of time, the financial system replaced a lot of the old school social capital. So financial capital replaced, but you see, financial capital, unfortunately, is more fragile than social capital, because social capital, has come with the dawn of humanity, right? But financial capital is just an artificial construct that is prone to corruption and breakdowns and blowups periodically over and over and over in history.
Financial capital has no soul.
Well, no.
It's got
no
soul.
It's just an artificial construct to make people at the top more rich, the bankers more rich, or the titans.
And on the surface, it can make things appear more convenient, but not necessarily what you're saying.
No, because ultimately, the most, if you're wanting, the worst thing the leaders of a nation can have are a bunch of people that are really worried and paranoid and panicking, freaked out, like they are now. And social capital during hard times really it's a mode of survival.
Yeah. Okay, good. So was that was number three or four?
That's number three.
Okay, number four.
Number four, okay, this is completely different. And I know that probably a lot of your listeners has never even checked in on their radar. Okay, number four is depletion or derangement of the human biome. Okay, which is, human biome is just a fancy term for those microorganisms of all different types that have evolved with us over millions of years, live in our gut, in our orifices, and in our skin. And the reason why, when we mess this delicate balance up, is that these microorganisms actually perform physiological functions, our bodily functions, okay? Like, for instance, they produce several types of vitamins that we can't produce on our own. Another thing is there's signalings for various tissue growth that comes from our body's interaction with these microorganisms. And it's the same with, you know, endocrine signaling, immune signaling. They're a vital part of our physiology. And if we kind of screw that up, our bodies go under a chemical stress. This isn't psychological.
Well, how does that get screwed up?
Well, it gets screwed up, number one, is our overuse of antibiotics. But also another really terrible factor is the our diet, the processed food that we eat. And I'll discuss this with number five, is full of these novel chemicals that didn't maybe even exist 50 years ago or even 30 or 40 years ago. And so we don't have the mechanism to efficiently break these down. So what happens is our body goes under stress. It tries to adjust itself. So despite the toxicity of this, it still keeps going on. That's how you die.
You said it's part of the bio. How do you say that?
B.
Can you spell it?
Yeah, absolutely. B as in boy. I as in indigo. O as in Oprah. M as in Mary. E as in Elaine.
I am. Interesting. So if it gets damaged, is there a way to repair it?
Well, okay, I'm not trying to make like a bunch of jokes here, but one thing that experimentally has worked is a fecal transplant, where someone who does have a good, you know, profile of their biome, you know, it's like a fingerprint. It changes from geographical location, you know. So my biome here in Ecuador is not the same as like what my biome was back in the United States. But you can do that. But the thing is
that this
because
is where, of your
you know,
diet?
Yeah. That's partially because of your diet. And when, of course, when we live in an overly sterile environment, you know, we're constantly trying to sterilize everything. These kind of things get screwed up too. But it's very, very important. I mean, we're not meant to be sterile. We're meant to have these microorganisms that serve as a primary defense. Like for instance, as our skin is a primary defense. It's one of our primary defenses. And of course, it's involved with a lot of physiological functions.
Interesting.
It's
so
deep.
I just hate to ask this next question, but did you say fecal transplant?
I heard that too, Matthew. I was waiting for you to ask what that was exactly.
I was just biting my tongue not to make a whole bunch of other comments here, but
it's fodder for
quick, tell us, because there's some people out there going, what
is that?
In our stools. We could use a lot of other words, but in our stools, okay, we have various profiles of microorganisms.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And if they've done this with mice and guinea pigs, if you have one that is depleted, you can take a stool sample and insert it in the rectum of the second animal who does have a depleted system. And
that's exactly
I
was afraid you were going to say.
I'm sorry. I know that these pictures are
I have
know,
to read
beyond
this research.
Comprehension.
Yeah, I'm not talking about research here. I'm talking about like there's research on this, right?
Matthew, let her finish, please?
As a matter of fact. Fecal transplants could be a major, very cheap, easy way to address a lot of problems in the future. Like you have someone, like say with Crohn's disease, intestinal,
mm-hmm.
you know, and of course,
yeah.
if they have uh-huh. diarrhea all the time because they have inflammation all the time, they're gonna totally mess up. Well, you could take someone who's healthy, has got a good profile. And just transplant the fecal mass into the, and it is is very being heavily investigated as very potent therapy.
Wow.
And this and this implant, it would take hold. Seemed like after that other person had a bowel movement, they would push that out as well.
Well, yeah, but you still have what it is that not all of your organisms come out in a bowel movement. You know, what they have to do is they have to populate the actual tissue wall.
So is this is planted, this is implanted anally, or is this injected into the bloodstream?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It would have to go, anally.
On the tissue walls, Matthew, not just inserted in there.
So I've got to read this research. This is interesting.
Anything.
No, I'm glad you did, because this gives me hope. There's some people I know who need some of this.
Can I bring something else up that I think would be very exciting? We all know about macrobiotics. I mean, this goes in the same vein as macro.
Uh-huh.
Do you understand? Do you understand? Do you know that the use of very specialized engineered populations of macrobiotics are going to be the next generation in antibiotics?
Well, that sounds good. I mean, that sounds great to me, because the antibiotics are causing massive problems. People take too many,
and
then they become almost immune to them, and then there's other kinds of problems that develop because of that. Now, this is one, honestly, I have not heard of this, so this is an interesting thing. I know it's funny, but it's also very interesting, because fecal matter would hold all kinds of organisms that would probably, as you said, populate the colon of the person they were inserted into probably fairly quickly, right?
Absolutely.
In
a matter
of hours.
I mean, yeah, you know how fast, you know, if you're exposed to a virus or bacterium when you're vulnerable,
mm-hmm.
how fast you get sick. You know,
this is going to help, and like two or three
hours later, you have a sore throat. It's very quick,
This helps with certain kinds of diseases.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And
so this has not been tried on humans yet, but this is something that's been done with...
I think it probably has. I just, it seems like I've ran over, I've run across a number of articles, but it's definitely been extremely well studied in animals.
Amazing. That is new information. What's number five? I can't wait to hear that one.
Number five is sort of kind of related, but it's more generalized. It's just chemical stress. So as I'll just kind of reiterate again, there are a lot of novel compounds that industry has produced, you know, in our, you know, modernization, our path to
mm-hmm.
modernization in the last 150 years. And, you know, of course, I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to understand that we have not evolved the metabolic machinery, especially from our livers, in order to break down these compounds. I mean, they're novel, they're new. So what happens? Again, this is how we're framing stress. Our body says, oh, no, something's out of whack, and it goes into the stress response trying to deal with, this level of basically toxicity. And ultimately, pollution, there's been a study out of Cornell, and ultimately pollution, believe it or not, is thought to be responsible ultimately for 40% of all human deaths in the world, whether it's pollution of the air, soil, or water.
Lamont, you're going to have to move.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
I said Lamont's going to have to move.
Oh, yeah.
He lives in a bad place. We all got to move to Ecuador.
Oh.
Is that the solution?
Yeah. You're going to have to come down here.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fine. You know, Ecuador seems like a cool place to come hang out.
Oh, yeah.
But listen, let me jump in here right quick. For our listeners who are just joining us, we're talking to Mary Wingo about the impact of human stress response. If you'd like to join us or ask Mary a question, please just press #1 on your phone. We'd be glad to hear from you. All right, I did that.
That's good. So say a little bit more about pollution, please.
Oh, yeah. And again, this is not really rocket science, but, we're exposed to many, many of these, of this types of contamination. And to think that they have no results, no impact, in my opinion, is a little bit misguided and a bit naive. So, yeah, I mean, and ultimately, and it's not just pollution. It's also, again, household chemicals, our hygiene products, our cleaning products. I mean, just stuff
mm-hmm.
that we have around the house that we're always slathering on our bodies. You know, we're always exposing ourselves. Again, our ancestors didn't have this. And the point is not to be sterile. The point is to have a good biome that keeps the bad organisms away. They actually
right.
are an army of defense for the bad mm-hmm. organisms or, you know, for other types of stressors. So, that's a big, big problem for humanity in general, not just the modernized world.
You know, I have some clients who tell me that when they go in the bathroom, in a public bathroom, they wash their hands, and then they take the paper towels and they wipe off the doorknobs and the latches and everything, so they don't have to touch anything on the way out. It's amazing to me how crazy people can get about that.
Well,
or the people that go to
washing.
The grocery store and got to wipe off the handles of the grocery cart. I don't know. You live in Ecuador. I don't know. You probably remember that. You come back to the States sometimes, right?
No, actually, I have not.
Well, you went in the grocery stores before, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Well, they got this
they
thing
have,
in
like,
grocery
those,
stores
that
they got these little wipe things that they give to everybody
right.
so they can wipe off where the other people were.
Yeah,
it's
and
like,
you
oh,
know,
my
you,
God.
Of course, you know what you're doing. You know what you're breeding superbugs. You know, you kill 99.9% of the bacteria, and that 0.01% is strong as ever, and it'll grow to fill the 100% again, and it won't
yeah.
be reactive.
Mm-hmm. That's why I don't use it.
No.
Mm-mm. Give me a little bug that protects me against the big ones, huh?
Yeah, it's not about being sterile. Like I said, it's about having, like, the flora that has evolved on you. Just let it do its job. And again, a lot of what we've adopted in the modernized world has depleted these populations.
Well, could you talk a little bit more, Mary, about what you're calling here the financial cost of stress?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is some mind-blowing stuff. And again, these are just basic, back of the envelope calculations. I'm sure that a real bean counter could go through and do a very stringent meta-analysis, and it would probably be more. Okay, so the figures I'm giving you are like on the lower end. Okay, more conservative.
Mm-hmm.
But stress is costing somewhere, I don't know, between $6 trillion. It's going to be minimum around 10% of the global financial output. So
okay.
It's okay. So like last year, it was like 70 trillion for the entire world, you know, the entire output. Well, it's around 7 trillion minimum, just back of the envelope, just quick and dirty calculations. And so it's probably more. So what we're looking at is a huge financial sink, and especially where our country our healthcare system is collapsing. This is not good news. This is, you have a lot of folks that are under extreme levels of stress, and a non-functional or a system, a healthcare system that is quickly becoming non-functional. And so that's one of the reasons I wrote my book, is that I was seeing this, and I kept waiting for somebody else to write the book. I was waiting for, like, some, Harvard scholar to write this book. But obviously, because this field is so complex, there's been very few people that have been able to kind of review the big picture of how all this works. Absolutely. Important. It's very important, I believe, for public health, because without the efficiently working healthcare system, people are going to need to understand what stress is, because that is likely what is going to make them sick or disabled. And I want them to be able to assign risk to it. I mean, like I said, similar to like smoking cigarettes, you're assigning a risk and like, okay, well, if this behavior is going to cause me maybe to die 15 years early and leave my family in poverty because there's no breadwinner, then this is a compelling reason to stop
mm-hmm.
that. Or for communities, like for, self-help groups and communities in general, and like, say, stressed areas like Flint, Michigan,
mm-hmm.
you know, to be able to actually give them a vocabulary, some tools that aren't just meant for other academics. It's meant for the general public to use, to empower themselves.
So if you have this for different kinds of diseases or we've had some people on the show recently talking about addictions, drug addictions, and I'm guessing that the rise of addiction is very related to the rise of the complexity and the intensity of stress in people's lives. And would you agree with that?
Okay. Okay, I'm glad you asked the question of addiction. And what I'm going to do is hopefully I'm going to really clarify this and demystify this for you and your listeners. This is really interesting stuff. Okay, so basically, we go back to our frontal lobes, okay, which control our impulses, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we overtax those, so we start losing function, just like you would a muscle. If you overexerted a muscle, you start losing function, okay?
Okay.
Well, when you are under stress and it just keeps on continuing and you've lost functioning in your frontal lobe and your fight or flight nervous system, because you've been under stress for so long, is starting to kind of malfunction, you
mm-hmm.
go into this alternate state. And this is how all mental illnesses, every single one of them, work. You go into what's called a dissociative state. Okay. It's, and that dissociative state, this is where the loss of impulse control comes.
Mm-hmm.
Basically what happens is you're under such stress, and so you go into what is called a freeze state. So it's not the flight.
Okay.
It's not the flight.
It's fight,
it's
flight,
freeze.
Or freeze.
Yeah, yeah, and so you're basically like a deer with the headlights. You're playing dead. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's like playing dead.
Yeah.
You know, you see a lion
right.
and pack a gazelle, and the gazelle
mm-hmm.
is acting like it's dead. You know, while it's being flipped around, but it's still alive, and it's just kind of sort of biding time. Hopefully, you know,
mm-hmm.
for a moment so they can escape. Well, this is the same mechanism, except
okay.
with our real complex brains, it makes us sort of go into this sort of la-la land that's not related to reality. And with that, every single addiction or self-soothing activity that we do that when we're under stress becomes intensified, because you're not fully
okay.
conscious. You're in that deer in the headlight
mm-hmm.
state. And that's
okay.
a very dangerous state to be in. It's important in that, you know, it's better than just having a heart going into shock, you know, but from, you know, being under stress. So it's sort of like the stage before death, actually. It is. It's you know, one step above death. It's not functioning. It's not a human state. It is, a human that is extremely wounded and has no other options than just to space out and do self-soothing activities that aren't healthy.
So if we fight, or we run away, we're in better shape than if we freeze. And that freezing state is associated with the dissociative state, kind of a disconnected place. And that's where addiction blossoms?
Oh, this is where every, I mean, if you're, like, say, if you're prone to, you know, say your family, you know, you're prone to schizophrenia, well, then this is when you're going to have the psychosis. If you're prone to depression, this is when, you know, it's so bad you can't get out of bed. If you're prone to, like, obsessive compulsive disorder, this is when, you know, you go into those periods where you can't stop washing your hands or whatever, doing whatever over and over and over.
Okay, so we get activated
there. This is the root of all mental illness. This is how mental illness
develops. So the, you're saying that the tendency towards some kind of dysfunction might exist in a person, however, based on how much stress we are required to endure chronically, it can activate that into intense episodes or more intensity in general in our lives.
Pathology, yeah. Because
okay.
You have to understand all mental illness comes from when your frontal lobes are fatigued and they're not functioning right. So, you know, the ability to rationalize, to regulate our emotions, to follow through on our intentions, that all goes out the door. It's like you become super ADD. You become super attention deficit.
I know a lot of people like that.
Oh, yeah. No, it's seriously. This is how our society changed. Our ancestors were not like that.
How far back do we have to go before we reach those people that you call the ancestors?
Well, of course, if you go to different cultures, you know, that you can find it right now. But this is somewhere between, like, the Industrial Age and the prosperous period after World War II. So this is when, historically, you start seeing stress-related diseases spike. It's like in the 1940s or 50s, and then it just, you know, it's gotten worse and worse and worse.
Mm-hmm. When did they start terming these disorders as stress-related diseases?
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you repeat for me?
When did they start calling some of these disorders? I mean, when did they start putting them under the topic of a stress-related disease?
Oh, very, very interesting question. Well, to go to that, we have to go to the father of medicine, modern medicine, and the man who coined the term stress. That's Hans Selye, and the man was just one of those crazy geniuses. He was like a sort of like a Martian, you know, from planet Mars. I mean, the guy was so brilliant. But yeah, he is the father of modern medicine, and this is where he, in the 1940s and 50s, started making these observations of these very specific patterns of pathology, and that were exacerbated under stress. So basically, it's a disease of modernized, they're called diseases of civilization. So, yeah, in the 20th century somewhere, this is when things started really getting haywire.
Well, I remember in the early 70s reading Hans Selye's work, and there were tests and you could take, and there was some kind of, it wasn't a test, but it was like a graph, and you could assign different points to stress-related events, and you could add up your stress.
Yes.
And even from positive, and stress can be caused even from positive things. And of course,
rate of adjustment. There is
right.
No good, or it's just the rate of adjustment. There's nothing more or nothing less. And whether you've won the lottery or gotten married or gone to prison, it still taxes your resources. This is where I diverge.
Yeah.
From a lot of other stress research, there's no good or bad stress. It's all just how much you're putting the pedal to the metal in order to adapt to what is thrown out.
Right.
But remember, stress is additive. This is an important lesson. That famous inventory, we call that inventory, where you take it and you add stuff up, is very famous. And what it does is it shows that stress is additive. And this is another compelling reason to aggressively manage stress.
So additive means it builds up, you know, one thing on top of the other.
Oh, absolutely.
Until it's so heavy you can't carry it. Your system can't manage it.
That's it. It's a carrying capacity. Yeah.
Matthew, I think we have another caller right quick. Let me see who this is. Let's give him a minute.
Okay.
718, you're on.
I know who that is.
Mary, I'd like to ask you a question. More than eating wholesome food and the environment, is it important to have a lot of family support and support from your neighbors, everybody? I read a place where there's a village, everybody supports each other, and they live to many, many, many years, to 100 years old and better, because not only because of the food, but because of the support everybody gives each other. That's very important, right?
Oh, yeah, that's part of social capital. That's absolutely, you have to understand, when we're born, we're basically the human form of larva. We're very immature, and it takes us well over a decade to even raise our offspring to where they're just minimally functional. We are wired to be social exactly for that reason, because, you know, we're so helpless when we're babies and small children. And so, yeah, this is social capital and social support is the original form of dynamics between human beings. I mean, this is like goes back to the beginnings of humanoids. You know, it's the primary source of economy and protection. Absolutely.
Right. Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks,
You're welcome.
Joan.
Thank you. Thanks, Joan.
You
Mary,
said
we're down to the last.
That was Joan.
I'm still going to try to find out how much you have to pay for that, but okay. Mary, we're down to the last few minutes of the show, so I'd like to give you the opportunity to tell our listeners how they can go get your book, where they can reach you, contact you, and all that good stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah, they can go to my website. They need to go to my website, marywingo.com. That's marywingo.com. I've got tons of videos and free info, as well as the basic framework that they can grab for free on how to science-based methods for actively managing and aggressively managing one's stress. They can also go to amazon.com. And pick up a paperback as well as downloadable copy. And I'm also available for various workshops, consulting for businesses, because the stress of having a stressed out workforce is the most expensive sunk cost that businesses have, and where everyone's kind of on edge right now. It could determine who survives as a business and who fails. And they can contact me at marywingo.com, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Oh, fantastic, Mary. I just want you to know, what's today? Today's Sunday. You'll see Matthew and I Tuesday.
Mary, thank you so much for being with us. It was
thank
really
you.
Informative and helpful.
You are so welcome. If you think of like another, angle that your listeners would like to know about, just have me back on. I'll be happy to come back on.
And I just want you to know that you made Lamont's day when you told him he asked the question of the century. I am never going to hear the end of that. He is going to remind me of that for as long as he lives. He asked the question of the century. He is never going to get over that.
Matter of fact, I got one up on you. We're going to play this show a couple few thousand more just so we can hear that over again.
You did good for him. You lowered his stress big time when you said that. That was good. Thank you very much, Mary.
Thank you. My pleasure, gentlemen. You guys have a good afternoon.
You too.
All right. Thank you so very much.
Thank
and
you.
For listeners that just joined in late, please go to our website, worldmovement.com. Go to iTunes, put in Can I Play a Play, and you can catch the beginning of the show, and it'll be available on all your social networks. You know, so go find out how you can get rid of some of this stress, people, so you can come back next week and hear Matthew and myself right here on Can I Play a Play.
Absolutely.
Thank you so very much, and we appreciate you coming to hear us on our platform, and hopefully we've helped somebody some way, somehow, because that is our mission. Thank you so very much. And let's see what Praise Master Chief got to say on the way out.
Yeah, yeah, old school. That's what I'm talking about. Listen, this ain't for everybody. Some of y'all need to hear this. I know you're in the trenches fighting, but check it out. I'm going to put it down like this so I can help the saints understand. Everything you're going through is all part of the master plan. Or what? You thought because you got saved, everything was going to be peaches and cream? You better wake up, son. Don't nothing come to a sleeper but a dream. Faith without works is dead. Read your Bible. You know what it says. He who don't work, don't eat. Slackers don't get fed. Yeah. Jesus said, he who puts his hand to the plow looks back the same ain't fit. Some of y'all ain't been in the trenches 5 minutes and you're about ready to quit. I ain't mad at ya, I'm just hitting you with the real. If you died for me and I was still tripping, now how you think that make you feel? Check this out, deep game, this here's deep, huh? Some of y'all ain't sawing nothing but you started trying to reach, huh? But after him who's able to possess your fathers by his glory, struggles might be part of your testimony, but it ain't the end of the story. Now the point is since it was prophesied way back in the day. Choir, sing your hook right here and see if the church can relate.
I know we can make it.
Strange, the fiery trials are to try you. You say, why you? But your shirt say, what would Jesus do? Why you asking if he ain't trying to do what he's saying? Huh? He told you he was going to have tribulations, but you thought he was playing. Huh? One minute you tell him how good God is and can't nobody beat the talk. The next minute you're backsliding so fast, look like you're moonwalking. Huh? Oh yeah, I'm preaching to myself because I ain't no better. Huh? It ain't like I've been following his every word, obeying it to the letter. But we soldiers, we got to remember that. Regroup, stay on point. Huh? Yeah, bow down, confess, repent, stay humble, let him anoint. Huh? It ain't easy as I thought it was. I'd be lying if I told you that. But it's showing up getting better all the time. Trust me, that's the fact. Ain't nothing we going through that can't be handled. God put that on his tongue. Like they say, you can shout now if you want to, because the battle's already won. So while you're going through the valley, don't even trip. You're going to be on top. Choir, send the hook line one more again. This time you don't stop.
I know we can make it.